All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we're talking about Ty West's A24 film, X, which is an absolute blast, and I'm really excited to talk about it. Joining me today is filmmaker Paul Hibbard, his first time here on the show. We have a great conversation coming up, getting into some of the obvious ones, which I think everybody knew we would end up talking about if we ever did an episode, and a few kind of out there pieces as well. So a lot of good stuff coming up in this conversation. Before we get to it, though, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find us wherever you're listening right now, or on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, Pocket Casts, Good Pods, all the big podcast apps. And wherever you're listening, if there happens to be a five-star button, hit that five-star button. We'd appreciate that. You could also follow us on social media at PiecingPod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. Also where I met Paul. So join the group, chat movies with us, and then maybe join me for an episode one of these days. Also, don't forget about our Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, from Awesome Movie Year, and from my music career. Lots of great stuff there, including this episode, because I'm about to post it as soon as I finish this whole spiel and export it. It'll be up on the Patreon first before it ever hits the main Piecing It Together feed. So check out the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, or maybe you're already listening on there. And if you are, I thank you. So with that, let's talk about X. All right, so this should be a fun one. We're talking about Ty West's X. And joining me is Paul Hibbard. Paul, how's it going?
Great. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm great. I'm packing in the podcast this week. I'm covering so many movies, I don't even know where I'm going to schedule it all. But there's a lot of good movies coming out, and I'm excited to talk about this one. This is one of the good ones, and it should be a lot of fun. Before we get to it, though, it is your first time on the show. We've been in touch in our Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces group a whole bunch and all that, but I'm happy to finally have you here. Why don't you tell our listeners a little about you and what you do?
Sure. I am. My name is Paul Hibbard. I am a filmmaker primarily. We just finished a movie, a little home invasion slasher movie called Some Visitors that just got sent out to the first batch of film festivals. Like, we just sent it out. So we are about ready to start the exciting festival run with that. And we're pretty excited. I'm sending it to festivals I've never thought I've had a shot with in the past, that I've never even tried for before. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Nice.
A film critic also. I write for a site called ZekeFilm.org. And I've done that off and on for about 10 years. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I'm very excited with my own film work to get back out there into the festival world after the last couple of years that we've had and not being able to actually go in person and all that stuff. So yeah,
yeah.
I'm sure that you guys are super excited about getting that film out there.
Yeah, this is one that I'm actually going to travel with too. I've had films play at festivals, but I've just never felt the need to travel to some of these festivals. But this one, I'm really excited to go some places and show it off to people.
Awesome. So with this movie X, I mean, I know you're a horror fan. Is Ty West somebody who you have been like really following? Was this a movie you had been really looking forward to?
Yes, definitely. Ty West, I love. He came out with House of the Devil, which came out, I believe that was 07, 08. It was sometime in the late aughts. And when he came out with that film, it was this godsend, in my opinion, to American horror at the time. Because the aughts, especially the late time of that decade, was a pretty bad period. A lot of horror nuts like myself were relying on more international horror movies and what Europe was doing at the time. America was kind of stuck in the rut of like Saw and Hostel sequels, and then they're kind of going through the CW remakes. And when he came out with that movie, it just felt like this blessing from America to show other countries that we could still make great horror. And I remember when it came out, I thought he was it. I mean, I thought he was the future of horror, and I thought he was going to kind of leapfrog Eli Roth and people like that. And then he has kind of fallen in obscurity each movie after that. which were still pretty good, was kind of like a step down and they weren't getting as much of a release. And then he just kind of disappeared. And I thought he was done. Yeah. And it became like this mystery in the horror world where this guy went and also why he didn't become who we thought he was going to become. And then with this movie X, it was like not only like kind of positioned as his return, but it was also his biggest step. He was getting a release even bigger than House of the Devil. Right. So it's, I mean, yeah, I was incredibly excited about it.
Yeah. And it's interesting to go from that kind of movie, like what the House of the Devil was, which I haven't seen since back when it first came out, but I remember really liking it too. And, but I don't know that X is the direction I would have expected him to go as a horror filmmaker. It's like a, you know, slasher is kind of horror adjacent in its own kind of lane in a way. And so it's not exactly what I would have expected him to do, but he's clearly having so much fun doing it.
Mm-hmm. I have this, not to like place intention on him, but I have this at least made up theory of what he did with this movie. Is the whole point is he wanted to come back with this movie because minimalistic horror, or if you want to call it like heightened horror, or whatever term that people want to use for
don't
it.
Don't say elevated.
I try to say any word but that. Yeah. I like to say minimalistic horror. Yeah. Has kind of been doing its thing, which is great. I mean, some of those movies are great, but then some of them I feel like are almost like becoming a parody of each other, of themselves, mm-hmm. I guess you could say. And then you kind of like have this movement of like, maximalist horror, and I think Malignant is a good example of that, which is mm-hmm. equally great. Both forms of horror are excellent, and I think he came back and did this movie that was sort of a mix between the two of them, where it kind of like had that minimalistic style, but then when it exploded it kind of went maximalistic. But he's also doing what he's always done to an extent. I mean, it is kind of a swerve, like what you're saying, but I also feel like it feels like a Ty West movie. And I had this like feeling that he came in and he was like, well, I'm going to show you all how this is done, and mm-hmm. I'm going to make my own film and make a film that I was making before, even before, I'll go ahead and say it, even before Elevated Horror was around. Like, he was the Elevated Horror filmmaker before Elevated Horror was a thing.
Yeah, I almost wonder also, like, how much of it, and again, like you say, you don't want to, like, kind of put intention on him, but, like, I almost wonder how much of it was like, okay, I'm making this movie with A24, mm-hmm. and I can't just do the quote-unquote Elevated Horror thing and fall into being and a quote unquote, again, A24 horror movie. It's got to be its own thing if I'm going to do this.
Yeah. And it was his own thing. And it was very, you know, to Ty West. Like a movie, for example, I haven't even seen yet, is Lamb, because I hear it's good. Have you seen Lamb?
I have. Yeah. It's good. Okay. I enjoyed it a lot. It's also, I don't think this is a spoiler to say, but it's not a horror movie, like at all. Yeah. And it gets lumped in because it's creepy and weird, but it's not a horror movie.
Okay, when I saw the trailer for that, I felt like it was like the logical conclusion of this Elevated Horror movement.
Sure.
And that, I mean, even if it's good, let's just make that the final step and let's just kind of start doing our own things, which is one thing I loved about Malignant, is I felt like that was an answer to Elevated Horror. But I also feel like what Wes is doing, like we're saying, is sort of like bringing it to the next step of where it needs to go, where it doesn't need to quite be as pretentious as some of these films may appear to be. Because once you get past The Witch and great directors like Robert Eggers, you're going to start getting into like B and C directors who are essentially doing impressions of those guys. And
it has to happen.
Yeah. And I feel like what you're saying, that Wes is kind of evolving that style before it gets to that place, hopefully.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll get into a whole lot more about this as we're going through puzzle pieces. So let's start jumping in. What do you have for your first puzzle piece?
The first one, I'm going to say it's the obvious one, but what's interesting about the movie is I feel like it isn't as influences the poster and the trailers make it appear to be, and that's Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which even from the poster, it's evoking it, because the poster to X is women's legs crossed to make the X signal, and it's through the angle that's essentially the same as the famous angle in Texas Chainsaw Massacre with the girl walking to the house from the down low angle. And as I watched it, I think I expected it to be much more of a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, not ripoff, but much more influenced by Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But then as I watched it, I kind of like realized that it's really just sort of the aesthetics of what he was doing was mm-hmm. influenced, and a lot of the other stuff he was doing was influenced by other movies that I wasn't even expecting. So, you know, a lot of the pieces that I put together that we're going to talk about here, I was seeing them as I was watching them, and they were like pleasant surprises because I wasn't expecting those at all. I was expecting a lot of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And, you know, from the van to the layout and the way that the house looked and the setting, it even kind of had that feel, that Texas Chainsaw Massacre kind of grimy heat feel to it.
Sure.
That's where it came in. But besides that, I think that he then just kind of went off in his own direction and did his own
thing. I think so too. And yeah, Texas Chainsaw is, of course, you know, first on my list as well. And like, you have to bring it up when talking about this movie. It's meant to evoke that feeling. And I actually did listen to an interview with him on The Big Picture. And he was talking about how like part of what he hoped to do, because he knew that the comparisons were going to be made, was just to like not completely take from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but to let the audience know, hey, I know, like, mm-hmm. I know that you think this. And so there's got to be some little references and visual cues and things like that. And yeah, I mean, the van, the gas station in the beginning, the way the house is laid out, there's so many little things. I think definitely that's the one you kind of have to start with. I'll go for my first piece, though, which is the other ultra obvious one. I think you could very easily describe this movie as Texas Chainsaw Massacre meets Boogie Nights. Mm-hmm. And so Boogie Nights is my first piece. Paul Thomas Anderson's film set in the world of porno, and filming a porno is a big part of this movie. X, this group of young people have gone out to this house in the middle of nowhere to film an adult film. And this not only gets into some of the like kind of classic porn actor archetypes, kind of in a similar way that Boogie Nights does, but also kind of lets you in behind the scenes of what that is like, of what filmmaking is like, and kind of lifts the veil of like, you know, the kind of things that go into creating a crew and the way that the actors kind of interact when the cameras aren't rolling, when they are rolling, and what the intentions are of the filmmakers. And so it really gets you into that filmmaking mindset. And I think that's a big kind of drive for why he made this story.
There's all kinds of things that along with just that basic premise, even the movie starts with Mia Goth looking into the mirror, telling herself she's good enough, which is basically how Boogie Nights ends. And then there's all kinds of stuff along the way. One thing that I really noticed with the Boogie Nights comparison is this takes place in 1979. And in the Boogie Nights, the New Year's Eve party where William H. Macy blows his head off, that takes place in 1979 also. And they're both addressing the future of pornography. And in Boogie Nights, they have that meeting with Philip Baker Hall and Burt Reynolds, where Burt Reynolds is hesitant to go to VHS. He wants to stay in the theaters and on film. And they have that whole conversation. And that conversation is in X also, where in this case, they're more embracing of the future.
It's the opposite.
And then another thing is they both have these aspirations of making porn better movies, more important, mm-hmm. because in Boogie Nights, you know, both Burt Reynolds and Mark Wahlberg have this dream about people like being entertained. And Burt Reynolds talks about how he wants people to sit in the theater after they masturbate and watch the rest of the movie because they want to see how it ends. And in this movie, you have the director who's being really pretentious and trying to make an avant-garde movie. And so Boogie Nights was huge. Like I was like, when I was watching, I was like, this is really influenced by Boogie Nights, way more than I was expecting.
For sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, not about Boogie Nights specifically, but back to your first puzzle piece. I was also thinking about part of it has to do with that transition to VHS tapes for sure. But I was also wondering the 1979 setting, if he wanted it to be where, oh, these people may be aware of Texas Chainsaw Massacre because it already exists in the world, as it not being like the earlier 70s or something before that. And knowing that The idea is in the air of a house full of creepy people that are going to murder the hell out of me if I go in there, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I definitely agree with that.
So what do you got for your next piece?
Okay, next one is a pretty obvious one also, and that is Psycho. Mm-hmm. I feel like Psycho might actually, in terms of horror, might actually be the one that's more influenced with the story than Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Just the idea that there's this massive house overlooking a smaller place where people are staying, and the old person in the massive house who is played by a young person is killing the people in the smaller place that's there. And
sure.
I don't know why. Maybe you heard about the interview, but I don't know why Ty West, I like the decision, but I don't know why he had Mia Goth play the older woman also. And mm-hmm. one of my ideas is that he is nodding towards Psycho, but also trying to get that kind of visual cue of somebody younger playing an older person. And in Psycho, it's literally a younger character playing an older person with Norman playing his mother. But this case, yeah. it's a younger actor playing an older person. But when you see the older woman, she looks off. She looks kind of more dangerous than an actual older actress might look. And
right.
I really wondered while watching if he was trying to get some sort of like symmetry to Psycho with that decision.
Right. And I'm not sure. He did not specifically talk about the whys of that. I don't know if maybe he's trying to let that kind of let us marinate on it a little bit first before really like talking about it. He only talked about the fact that Mia Goth was just so on board with the idea of doing that and just mm-hmm. how excited she was. And then I didn't actually get to stay through the end of the credits. The cleanup crew kind of kicked us out, but you know, there was a trailer for the prequel that he shot at the same time.
Yeah, I did not stay either. It wasn't until I got home and I saw on social media that I should have stayed. And when the movie, yeah. when the credits started, my friend and I, we were like, there's not going to be anything at the end of this. This isn't that type of movie. And yeah. apparently there was.
Yeah, I had read beforehand that there was, and I was all prepared to sit there. I was waiting and waiting, and all of a sudden the cleanup crew came in and turned the lights on. I was like, what are you guys doing, man?
Yeah. But one more thing about Psycho also, well, actually they reference Psycho in the movie, mm-hmm. but also on top of that, the part with the car half submerged in the water is completely out of Psycho.
Oh, sure.
And it's my favorite part of Psycho, because that's like one of the times you see Norman as mother dressed as Norman when he's trying to get that car down in the water. So it's one of my favorite shots in Psycho, and they reference it in here too, which I loved.
That's awesome. Yeah, Psycho's been coming up a lot on this show lately. I mean, you know, Hitchcock, of course, so influential, so it's not really a big surprise. But I'll go to my next piece, and this kind of stays in line with some of what I was talking about with Boogie Nights, with the idea of kind of showing the behind the scenes of the filmmaking. There's been a lot that's been talked about with this movie X about how it kind of is showing this intersection with horror and porn, and how they're both these outsider types of film where the filmmakers have to be very entrepreneurial and creative and very DIY and working without the assistance of the system. And I thought of Dolomite Is My Name, where we see Eddie Murphy's Rudy Ray Moore trying to pull together this like weird ragtag crew of people to put together a blaxploitation style movie at the time. And that is another style of movie where they really did not get a lot of support from, you know, any kind of system, and had to kind of just figure everything out themselves and really have that do-it-yourself spirit. And it shows through in what this crew of filmmakers in the movie is doing. And I think kind of probably speaks back to what a lot of horror filmmakers go through as they're starting out, even though in here it's porn.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I mean, even with the take place in the 70s and everything, now that I think of it, I think back to that movie, that look is kind of throughout like the filming, the behind the scenes parts of shooting the porn.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That's good. Good. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. My next is, I'm going to go with David Cronenberg's Rabid.
Nice.
Which is the plot itself doesn't really apply, but it's more the messaging, I think, that Cronenberg's going for. So in Rabid, you have the character gets in a car accident, and she has this Parasite turns her into sort of like a vampiric figure. Then she creates an epidemic and she shoots this thing out of her armpit into her victims. But the, when she does it, it's usually involved in a sexual act, and she's finding kind of like these like repressed people, and she's getting close to them, and she's trying to get the infection inside of them. But the way that Cronenberg is obviously doing it is it looks like they're having sex. It looks like they're having an orgasm when it comes together. And the victims then turn into these vampires. And the way that it appears is that the sexual act has awoken something inside of them that has turned them violent. And I think that's exactly what Cronenberg was going for. He was like playing into the kind of conservative idea of the 70s about sexual freedom could be addictive if we don't suppress it.
Slippery slope.
Yeah. And I feel like Ty West was getting that too. Like the old woman, something about the sexuality, something about looking through the window and watching them having sex, then awoken something really violent inside of her. And yeah. I thought of that movie while watching it.
I like that. That's awesome. That's a great piece. And there's a lot going on that I got to admit, I'm not 100% what Ty West's like ultimate goal is with the storyline of these old people and the repressed like sexuality and like the story of them, especially Pearl, wanting that connection, and you know, old people still have sex, and you know, it's kind of it's kind of a taboo subject, and what exactly the exploration is.
I mean, this is just my theory. I don't know if this was intention, but one thing I picked up is I took it as a film that was much more about porn than it appeared to be. Instead of it just being a story on the periphery, I think the movie was a lot more about pornography. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think pornography is a subject in political terms that's kind of like hard to necessarily address, because I think in some way it's accepted that that pornography can make men more violent, and it can make repressed people who don't know how to handle it more violent. But there's also like this third wave feminism idea that it represents sexual freedom and it represents empowerment. And what I liked about this movie is it kind of represented both sides, how there was this sort of like symbiotic relationship between the creator and the consumer, and how it can be something that for the enlightened, it can be more empowering to them. And because I believe that the filmmakers and the actors and everything, they are all very healthy in their views of sexuality, especially for 1979. Yeah. And then the repressed older people who see it and they don't know how to process it the same way, I think it creates sort of like a violent reaction from them.
Sure.
So that was one thing that I took, that is that pornography can be something that's empowering, and also it could be possibly dangerous.
Sure. I think that's definitely a good explanation of where things are going with the point of all this. But I'm going to go to another piece, which is probably not really an inspiration here, but I wanted to bring it up. I'm pretty scared of old people. That's like a thing about me. Okay. And that all stems back to a trauma film from either 1989 or 1991. There's two different dates listed. I'm not sure which it is. It's called Dead Dudes in the House, aka The House on Tombstone Hill. Have you ever seen this?
I have never heard of this.
Okay. No, I've never heard anybody talk about this movie. I don't know why I saw this movie, but I was, I guess, too young. Although I think the only reason I saw it was because I already loved Evil Dead, so I couldn't have been that young. I was already watching the Evil Dead movies, and somehow or other, one of my parents like heard that this is supposed to be another funny, you know, ridiculous, over the top horror movie like the Evil Dead, and got it for me. And I honestly give this movie a lot of credit for my personality going dark, because of all of the sleepless nights that it just ruins my brain, because I couldn't sleep for weeks and weeks and weeks after watching it. In retrospect, it's probably a funny movie. You know, I mean, it's trauma. You know, it's probably meant to be funny. It probably is funny. One of these days, I'm going to force myself to rewatch it. Anyone out there who has seen it, get in touch with me. I'd love to hear what you think of it. Should I face my fears and actually go back and watch this stupid movie? But in it, a group of young people go to this mansion to go like clean it up. And one of them pisses on a gravestone, which awakens
the dead old lady who comes out and systematically murders all of the young people. And sounds ridiculous, sounds fun, scared the shit out of me. And so just the idea of murderous old people made me think maybe it's in his wheelhouse. Maybe it's something that he's seen at some point that planted the idea a little bit.
Sounds awesome. Sounds like drama. Yeah. So
I got to rewatch it one day. I got to make myself.
I got to check this out because old people are scary. And that will lead to my next one, which is The Shining.
Nice.
Which there is a direct reference in The Shining when Jenna Ortega is trying to axe the door down and she reaches through.
Yeah.
So that direct reference is in there. But also part of me thinks that maybe Ty West, when he watched The Shining, he saw the part where the ghost lady in room 237 turns into old ghost lady and starts to become aggressive towards Jack Nicholson. And he wanted to make a whole movie about that woman.
Fair enough. Yeah. Right.
So, yeah, The Shining was one I was really thinking of too. And it's a good way to bounce off yours. Cause I do think that old lady is terrifying in The Shining, but she's really only in it for that one part. And there is like a part of me when I watch it where I'm like, you know, that woman, she could be a whole movie. That ghost, old ghost lady could be a whole film. And that's kind of what Ty West did here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's funny. And yeah, let's get that character and just go wild with it and just have it just killing people and just stabbing people in the neck. Yeah, no, that's a good one. I'll go, I have one more piece here, and this one also maybe too new to actually be an influence. I'm not sure exactly when Ty West started writing X and developing it, but I thought of last year's Censor from Prano Bailey Bond, an interesting movie that kind of takes place in the world of the video nasties in the 80s, and all of like the kind of fringe horror filmmaking. And again, you know, the world of that do-it-yourself indie, like beyond indie, really, just like totally do-it-yourself horror filmmaking, and the way that it intersects with these porn filmmakers, they both kind of deal with the same kind of crews, the same kind of limitations on making a movie, and both, you know, go towards, you know, things going bad and people dying. And I'd imagine, you know, Ty West has said that if this does well and then they, you know, release Pearl, he would love to make a sequel. He's already got the prequel in the can. He'd love to make a sequel if things work out. I could totally picture we're going to find out exactly what's on that film reel at the end. It might not just be porn. So, you know, I guess we'll find out. And that would kind of also tie it in with that whole video nasty, like what is real, what isn't real in the film within the film. So,
oh, that's great. That one's awesome. I didn't think about that one. And I love Censor too. Censor was
really good.
I think it's my favorite horror movie of last year. I love that movie.
Nice.
This one is kind of, it's not really an obscure movie, but it's an obscure grab at this. And it's one that I'm probably stretching a little bit, but I also think that I'm not stretching it as much as it might sound at first. And Ty West, he does a bunch of interesting editing choices in this movie. He does like wipes across the screen. He does split screen. And one thing that he does that I love is he kind of does this sort of like flickering transition where it goes to a concurrent scene and it'll bounce back forth. So it'll be on one scene and then it'll go to the next scene for a second and then bounce back to the first scene and just kind of do that almost like a light flickering back and forth before it goes to the other scene. And there's a movie I've seen that in before. And I remember when I saw it, I loved it in this movie. I loved it so much. I sent it to my editor at the time. And I was like, well, we should do this. And we didn't. And I've never seen anybody do it until Ty West does. But it is the movie Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, which is directed by Sidney Lumet. And when I was watching this movie, I thought of that movie immediately. How Lumet does is he actually does like a sound effect that goes with it. So when it goes back, forth, there's actually like a boom, boom, boom that hits when he does it. I was like, you know, I've seen this, but there's no way that Ty West got it from there. But then I remember that Sidney Lumet is kind of in that PTA world where Anderson is a huge fan of Lumet. And Philip Seymour Hoffman is the lead actor in Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. And I was like, this kind of is in that world too. And as I kind of watched X more and I saw how much Boogie Nights was happening here, I was like, I bet Ty West. It's just a huge Paul Thomas Anderson stan.
Sure.
I would not be surprised if he kind of follows the lineage of what has influenced Anderson, which would include Lumet. And if that's the case, I would not be surprised at all if West turned out to be a fan of Lumet and a fan of this movie. And I became, by the end, I was convinced that's where he got it from. So
that's interesting. Yeah. That's good. I forgot that it had edits like that in that movie. That's a great movie. I haven't seen it since it first came out, but yeah, I forgot that it had those edits, and that is really interesting. And I'd be really curious to just hear like a long form interview with him about like, you know, intention and all that, because it is an interesting choice. And I love the split screen. I mean, the stuff with the alligator, I mean, that whole sequence is so cool. Like,
that was incredible. This wasn't with editing, it was with shooting, but he did some great things I loved where he would show us the threat of what was coming before the characters realized it, or before a scare came of it. But he would do it in this way where it wouldn't be a cut, but it would be like a tilt of the camera. And he did it with the alligator. There's one time where it's just, the camera is on Brittany Snow in the water, and it just slowly moves over to the alligator. And I liked it where it was almost like he was taking the audience's head, like by their chin, and just moving it over to what they needed to see. And he does it later, when the executive producer is in the barn, where he tilts our head down to see the nail on the ground. It's almost like, I'm not going to try. There's no jump scare. There's nothing else. I'm just going to slowly show you what's coming. There are so many confident decisions he made in this movie. That's the one thing I love the most about this movie, is it's so confident. Like, it's such a movie. It's such a deliberately, confidently paced movie. And he knew what he was doing. And he knew how good the drama was in the beginning. I've heard some people say that they don't like how long it takes to get to the horror, but I loved it. I hear a lot of horror filmmakers who say that a great horror has to be a great drama first, which is true to an extent, but a lot of horror movies, the drama in them can't sustain like a full drama. So it's not like they're making like Moonlight, or they're making you know, Call Me By Your Name, and it turns into a horror. They're making movies that need the horror, but this was a movie where I was like, this, the drama in this is great. Like with the sound girl, when she wants to get involved with the porn and her boyfriend, the director, has to film it. I was like, this could be the movie right here. The after effects of what happens could be the movie, and I would be completely happy with it. This is truly one of the movies that is as good of a drama if it wanted to be a drama and ditch the horror parts.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And I think a lot of that goes to some really fantastic performances, like all around. I mean, Mia Goth is just turning them in one after another, just always something weird and interesting and unique. And she's just so great here. But everyone else, Jenny Ortega is having such a year, and Brittany Snow
is great.
She's got
such a scream.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's no wonder they rested the trailer on that, and then of course the cop saying it's a fucked up horror movie or whatever. Those are like the two big selling points, I guess. But she's great. But
Mia Goth is so interesting looking too, because she's like,
oh, I know,
attractive and scary. And so I saw someone on Twitter say she has an 824 face, which I think is perfect.
Yeah. I remember back when High Life came out, I think I tweeted that, like, I want to see her just do like a 90s romantic comedy, like just straight up, like it would make no sense with her. Like, it would just be so weird.
But, yeah.
So I'm out of pieces. Do you have any other pieces you wanted to bring up?
You know, these are just minor ones. One of them with Mia Goth is the remake to Suspiria, just in the way that Tilda Swinton played two characters. I kind of thought about that.
Sure.
The other thing is just, it's less for this movie per se, but it's more just for Ty West's whole career, which kind of follows this. West has, he's got that formula where he does build up, and then explosion of horror. And sometimes he does it differently. Something like House of the Devil is a build up for a very long time, and then the horror hits. And then sometimes he brings in the horror a little bit earlier. But a movie that, at least when I first saw House of the Devil, that really reminded me of that formula and who I felt like at the time he got it from was Takeshi Miike with Audition. Have you seen Audition?
I haven't, no.
Okay. Audition is great. I mean, I just ruined that it's going to turn into a horror movie for you. But if you ever watch it with somebody, don't tell them it's a horror movie, because that movie is pretty unidentifiable as a horror movie until it becomes horror. And then when it becomes horror, it's absolutely scary. And I feel like Audition is a puzzle piece for his whole career.
Right, right. Yeah, for that like long build up and not knowing at all what's going to happen. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I'll go ahead and do the finished puzzle and go down the list of everything we just talked about. So for X, we have Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Boogie Nights. Of course, those had to be the first two. Then we talked about Psycho, Dolomite Is My Name, Rabid, Dead Dudes in the House, The Shining, Censor, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, Suspiria, and Audition. So yeah, I think that there's like, it almost feels like there's a lot that we didn't even get into that much, just because there's like a lot going on here. But are there any closing thoughts, anything like specific you wanted to bring up that we didn't quite get to with the pieces?
Okay, one thing that I would say, this is a point I was also going to make about Boogie Nights, is the whole like relationship between the repressed and the free, the sexually free, and how Boogie Nights, even though he was in a world that was stigmatized, when it was juxtaposed to a more conservative world, it was the more repressed world was viewed more violently and more angrily. And I really think of the scene in Boogie Nights where the pickup truck of guys come and beat up Mark Wahlberg, beat up Dirk Diggler after he's kind of been kicked out of the porn world. And it's kind of, it's kind of like viewed as this way that he's been ostracized from the quote unquote stigmatized or the quote unquote immoral sexual part of society, and he's in the more repressed part, but things are actually worse and more violent and more dangerous. And I kind of like, you know, I had that feeling just to kind of focus on that, that I, you know, he is like making that point about how, you know, the immoral side is actually the safer, the more enlightened part. And I don't know, I just think there's a lot of ideas. And I guess my final thought is, what I love the best, what West did, is the conversations I'm going to have about this movie for years reminds me of the conversations that I've had about Texas Chainsaw Massacre for years. Because Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, is kind of viewed as this nasty little horror movie, but there's so much stuff going on there. There's stuff about, like, you know, small business people being put out by bigger conglomerates. There's things about the kind of like feel of Nixonian politics in America. You can have all kinds of discussions. And since Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there's been all these filmmakers, people like Rob Zombie, who have made movies that have only focused on the violence, the aesthetics, the carnage, but they've missed like the thoughts that Hooper was putting into it.
Sure.
Tobe Hooper was a very smart, very intellectual, very political person. And I feel like West made a movie that was influenced by it, but he knew to put the ideas in there too. And I think because of that, this movie is going to be the, I don't know, even more so than the Texas Chainsaw Massacre sequel remake that came out this year. I think this is going to be the true successor in the fact that he got the spirit of what Hooper was doing and made a movie that paid it honor.
No, I think that's a great note to go out on, because yeah, absolutely. Especially in a year where we just got this new take on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah, I think a lot of these movies, whether it be within the actual series or just movies that are clearly influenced by the original Texas Chainsaw, they're missing all those layers and just focus on just the brutality of it all, which can make for a fun movie, sure. But there's definitely a lot more here to kind of sink your teeth into. And I guess the only other thing I would mention, you know, we brought it up once already, but this prequel that they shot in tandem with X called Pearl, it's going to be really interesting to see when that comes out and see, even more so than its own thing, but just how the overall story is changed. Because you got to imagine, if we're going to be seeing the Pearl character, you know, I don't know if it's 30, 40, 50, 60 years earlier, whatever it is, it's supposed to be her when she's younger. I'm assuming Mia Goth, you know, without all kinds of prosthetic makeup on. It's going to be really interesting to see how that changes the actions of the character in this movie and how it all kind of works together as an overall story. So yeah, I'm just really looking forward to that and seeing how that turns out.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for any Ty West movie, but that sounds awesome to stay in this world.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, awesome. Paul, to wrap this thing up, is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
You know, what I watched recently, it's a movie I'm sure everyone has seen. It's a, and I haven't seen it in like 20 years, but it's Christine, the Carpenter, John Carpenter, Stephen King movie. And I was kind of unfair in that movie for years because I looked at it as lesser Carpenter. And I looked at it as just sort of like a very simple story about a car coming to life and killing people. And watching it, I realized just how much more was going on about there, how much was being said about toxic masculinity in it, how it kind of had this like carry thing going for it, where it was a sympathetic villain. And I was just blown away. Like I remember watching it and being like, this has jumped to the top of my favorite Carpenter movies now.
Nice.
It's the last thing I watched.
I haven't seen that in forever either, but every October I watch at least two or three Carpenter movies. So I think maybe it's time this year to finally rewatch that one.
Yeah, I think at least you will appreciate it more than memory might serve.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Well, Paul, why don't you tell people where they could find you and your film and everything else you're up to?
Sure. I mean, just find me on Letterboxd. That's the only social media app I put any thought in anything I say. So just find me. My name, Paul Hibbard, H-I-B-B-A-R-D. And I post things on there about my film also, so you can keep up with my film on there. And if I can promote this, if there's any listeners in the St. Louis Midwest area, on April 30th, we're doing a charity screening of the 1977 classic Japanese film House. And we're doing it at a local theater called Arkaden, and all of the proceeds go to a charity called 10th Life, which helps disabled and special needs cats. So come out. I'll be there. I'll be presenting. We're going to have 10th Life people there. They're going to have kittens. So if you want to come just play with the cats and donate money, you can do that. But you should stick around for House because that's a great movie.
Oh, that's awesome. That sounds like a really great event. Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much, Paul, for joining me. And hopefully we can get you back again sometime.
Yeah, I would love to do it. Thanks for having me.
Check out the Sonic Cinema Podcast, where film critic Brian Scuttle takes you through the year discussing classic films, reviewing modern hits and misses, covering film festivals, and interviewing filmmakers and film critics. Click subscribe at YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Google, and other platforms, or follow along at www.sonic-cinema.com.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about X. Thanks to Paul for joining me on that one. And thank you to you for listening. If you enjoy what we do here on the show, make sure you're subscribed wherever you listen to podcasts. And a 5-star rating and review would be very nice. So you could do that over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Good Pods or on Podchaser. And there's probably some other apps that you could do it on. Whichever one you like to use, hit the 5 stars, and we do appreciate that. You can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join in the conversation. As a matter of fact, Jason over at Binge Movies reminded me to include M. Night Shyamalan's The Visit as a puzzle piece, and so shout out to Jason. I did have it on my overall list of things that I might bring up. I didn't end up bringing up in the conversation, but thanks for the reminder, and definitely... that is another movie about creepy old people, so definitely it deserves to be here. So, yeah, get in touch with me on social media at Piecing Pod. You could also join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. I told you about our Produced by David Rosen Patreon at the top of the show. Don't forget about that. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. I'll be posting some new music stuff on there next week. And speaking of my music... let's go out with a piece of it, and this being a horror movie, I'm going to go with a piece from a horror short film that I scored called Daisy. This is a track called Daisy, and this was part of the compilation album I put out a couple years ago called Beater. It was a feature film score for a film called Beater, as well as some short film scores from the same director, Chris Johnson. So I thought this would be a good fit for this film. It's horror, it's creepy, it's weird, and Daisy is kind of a old lady name, right? So yeah, fits in a number of ways here. So this is Daisy. It's on my album Beater, original motion picture soundtrack. Hope you enjoy it. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.